The Adventures in Hell World podcast talks in depth about QAnon. While it's meant to be comedic informative, sometimes we have to get into things like child abuse and violence against people. Listener discretion advised.
Hello, everybody. I am Mike Grains, a.k.a. Poker and Politics, and welcome to another incredible episode of Adventures in Hell World. This week, I am joined by Eric, the Deep State operative.
Yes, I am back after my brief hiatus.
Said with all the passion and sizzle of a UPS truck. I can feel it. I can feel it in your heart. And we're also joined by Steph. It's Steph. Yeah. If only I was working like a morning zoo crew, I would have had the clapping soundboard ready to go there. That'd have been so much better.
I just noticed that your shirt does not say drink Coca-Cola. It says drink Adrenochrome.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I love this shirt. I got it from some place called Bohemian Grove. And they sent me a free sticker that came with the shirt, and it had the 19 hijackers, and in the empty box for the 20th hijacker, it had a picture of Dick Cheney. Love it.
That would be right up your alley. That would be like the, there was the weekend where someone posted like the, it was a standard thing where it's like, what opinion will get you in trouble meme? And,
Oh yeah, one of those.
I replied to it and said Oswald acted alone, and the evidence for that is overwhelming. And boy, howdy, did I get more engagement than I could have ever imagined. And
you were Flynn with the 24 swords pointed at your face.
Yes, I was, and and also much like Rorschach, I was not locked in there with them. They were locked in there with me. I think my favorite one was someone quote tweeted me and said, man, he's struggling in them replies, but he's giving it his best. And I was like, yes, I am. I am here to talk shop. Don't threaten me of a good time. Oh, wow. That reminds me, like, I don't even know who they are. The influencer people who, aborted their kid because they were going to have Down syndrome. And then all these people started freaking out about why would you kill your baby? And it's like, well, because raising a Down syndrome child is really difficult, and I can totally see why you would not be up for that. So yeah, I totally get it. Like, that's a really tough decision to have to make, and I don't really fault you either way you go on it, because again, it should be your decision. The government should not step in and tell you if you have to carry a fetus of any kind to term.
And also, it's America, and raising a regular, healthy child is extremely expensive, so expensive that nobody can even buy a house anymore. And what? So you're going to blame that? Blame capitalism, man.
I have a bunch of different feelings, but I just heard about this right now, so I'm kind of going through it right now. But I mean, because like, I agree that nobody should be forced to have a kid if they don't want to. And I'm all for them making their own medical decision. But it's like, at the same time, you know, I work in special education. So I spend a lot of time with people with Down syndrome and other conditions like that. And it is hard. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it, but it's like, at the same time, I feel like, you know, they have value too. But again, it wasn't my decision to make. So in the end, I can't say I'm against it because that'd make me a hypocrite, but I do have a lot of different feelings about it.
Well, having opinions about these things is what makes us people. But at the end of the day, as you said, it's just like, where do I get to step in and say, no, you must do things my way? Like my opinion overrides your autonomy. That's like kind of the situation that is so like messy about being anti-abortion. It's just my God or my morality or my ethics or something makes it so that you're not allowed to do what you want to do because I have a feeling about that. And we have enough people with enough political power in America where that works, which is horrifying. And should not be the case. But what happened was this led me down a rabbit hole where I was arguing with people, because that's all I live to do is to fight on the internet. And my OG fighting was arguing with theists, because I'm an edgy atheist from the 90s. I mean, and it's that's just who I am. So I'm just going down. I'm playing all the classic hits with this guy, and we got from the whole argument of about abortion to why does God allow people to suffer, blah blah blah. And eventually he hit me with this thing where he was like, well, you know, they say that hell is, the gates of hell are locked from the inside. And I'm like, who says that? I've never heard that. And I had to like look up that, like, that was like theologians many, many centuries after the Bible was written. And I'm like, your stance is not biblical. And he was like, yes, it is. I'm like, well, then quote your section of the Bible that says that. And he did not reply, because there's nothing in the Bible that says, well, you go to hell, but you can get out of hell whenever you want to get out of hell. And
yeah, all this stuff we talk about with the devil and hell and that, it's a lot of it is pretty modern, like relatively speaking. It's, you don't see a whole lot of, you don't see a whole lot of like Lucifer and that being brought up in the Bible. Like even like the Satan that's mentioned in the book of Job is supposed to be, is like not necessarily the original fallen angel, but like another angel whose job was to basically be a thorn in God's side.
Right. Yeah. He would like what people would say nowadays is like the king can't execute the jester, like that angel was just the angel who was like, yo, God, I don't know that you're right about this. And God's like, how could you possibly say that? I'm God. And then that Satan, which is just means adversary, is just says, yeah, well, Job wouldn't love you. And then if you did bad things to him, and then God does horrible things to him to win a bet, which makes God kind of a monster. The book of Job is really bad if you're a Christian, and you should feel terrible for trying to apologize for it. My favorite part about that is that God kills all of Job's kids, and then later on he just gives him more kids later, because that'll make up for it. Hey, your old kids are dead. Who cares? You get more kids. It's all good now.
God is Oprah, except instead of cars, he's giving kids.
Yeah, just more children. It all works out for Job in the end, because that's the moral of the Bible, is that you might die so that your father can be part of a pawn in a wager between God and some angel. Go ahead.
I got to look it up, because I'm not sure exactly, but I know like a lot of, you know, I know this will piss off a lot of literalists, but a lot of what's in the Bible is known to be like stories that theologians came up with in order to present a moral. Like I remember being in Catholic school and a Christian brother telling me, now the book of Jonah, this was written like at this time period, and they were, and it's all symbolism and allegory. None of it actually happened. I'm like, okay, well, this guy is a man of God and he's telling me that this book should not be taken literally. So, you know, I mean, that kind of seals the deal for me right there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that so many people are like, now the flood totally really happened. And other people just say, no, it didn't. It's very obviously not true. Please don't do that. And then the young earth creationists are just, why are you being weak, bro? What's wrong with you? Back to flood. Let's go. It's all in on the flood all day. But the funniest thing is every time I have these arguments with people, I have my standard path. I walk people down, and then I just ask them the questions I'm always going to ask them. And my main question is, one of them is just, why did God allow the serpent into the garden? Why did he make the fruit accessible to Eve's reach? Like, he could have blocked that tree off. He could have kicked the serpent out. He's all powerful. So God set these people up to fail. And the people that I'm arguing with will, without fail, tell me that the serpent is Satan. And I'm just like, that is a very modern interpretation of the serpent. Like, the serpent was not Satan in the original texts.
Yeah, it was literally a snake.
It was literally a snake that had legs, and then God took its legs away to explain why snakes are snakes now.
Yeah.
He's like, yay, crawling lizard, you now lose your legs and must crawl on your belly. Boom, I have done that. Which is why in the book of Job, when Satan shows up, it's like, Satan walks up to God. It's like, well, that there you go, because Satan wouldn't be able to do that if he was Satan in Genesis, because he wouldn't have legs. And also another theory of, in the Middle Ages, the serpent is often portrayed as Lilith, aka Adam's first wife, who, again, these people don't get into at all, because that's a form of theology they don't care for. So we're not going to talk about that.
I remember reading, I don't remember what the translation was, but I was reading one translation of the Bible and with copious footnotes. And at one point they mention it, Lilith is mentioned by name somewhere in Genesis, and there's a footnote next to it. And if you, when you read it, it says like, this is assumed to be a symbolic reference to all monsters of all types. I'm like, oh, so you do believe in symbolism when it suits your narrative.
That's really bad for Christianity, because symbolism will be their downfall. So I mean, that's it. We're toppling the entire faith. We're bringing the whole rotten temple down. It's going to be biblical as we destroy the Bible, which is very ironic. But yeah, if you look at Middle Ages art of the fall and the garden, like the serpent in those situations is often portrayed as Lilith, and she's portrayed as a naga, where she's like a female upper body and like a snake lower body. And none of that is around nowadays. Now the serpent is old Scratch, and he's stirred up trouble in the garden, and then God shows up and is like, hey, what are you doing? And Satan's like, what do you mean, what am I doing? You're all-knowing and all-powerful. You knew I was here. don't try to play coy with me, God.
Lilith had this big resurgence in the 90s, too, because I remember, you know, like Lilith Fair.
Lilith Fair, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then Lilith features heavily in Vampire the Masquerade. Like, supposedly she's the one who turned Cain into the first vampire.
And oh, stuff. That makes sense. I like that. Yeah.
So, in the mythology of Vampire the Masquerade, in the Bible, you know, when God curses Cain, Cain says that, you know, there's no way he could live with this because anybody who sees him will immediately kill him. So he says, I'm going to put my mark upon you so that anyone who sees you knows that killing you will cause me to avenge you. And so, according to Vampire the Masquerade, that Mark put upon him was vampirism, and then he met Lilith, who taught him how to use his blood to, you know, to create supernatural powers and stuff.
Aha! That works for me. My favorite part of all of that is the fact that Cain is like, no, once you kick me out of the Garden of Eden, all the other people will kill me. And God's reply should have been, what are you talking about? The only people on this earth right now are Adam and Eve, and they're your parents. Like, but instead, God's like, that's a very reasonable fear to have, good sir. Let me mark you so you won't die.
Well, it is brought up that there were others besides Adam, Eve, Cain, and Abel. It's just they weren't important enough to be mentioned because because it's said that like Adam and Eve had several sons and several daughters, and the only other one that gets mentioned is the third son Seth, who I think is born after Abel is killed.
Well, I like the idea of that. They're like, oh, our murderous son killed our other son. Quick, let's create another son to replace him with.
And because I remember like reading. Reading Genesis, and it says, and they tell the story, you know, Cain kills Abel. Then I flip the page. Cain knew his wife, and I'm like, wait. I feel like I'm missing something here. So I looked into it, and then it's like, yeah, there were several other brothers and sisters, but they were the only people on earth. And so I've seen some crazy, like somebody's like, no, it doesn't count as incest because the first humans on earth held the genetic code of all humanity, therefore it was impossible for inbreeding to happen. I'm like, that's not how genetics works. It's not a solution that if you mix it with water it dilutes. That doesn't happen. But
yeah,
this is what happens when you convince yourself that everything in there is the literal truth, and then you start coming upon things like how can Cain have had children if the only other people around were his sisters?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or his mother. All,
right, exactly. Yeah, it's not great. It's suboptimal. And boom, there we go. 15 minutes of atheist Bible study. Exactly what everyone who listens to Hellword was here for, but...
Wait.
Sorry,
I was going to spend a couple minutes talking about why I wasn't here last week, but...
Oh, go for it. Go ahead. Well, explain. Indulge. The floor is yours.
Okay, so Sean Duffy, his documentary really spoke to me. So my family just decided to go and have a road trip and see America. Our road trip was planned months ago. It had nothing at all to do with Sean Duffy. But no, we decided, my mom has always wanted to go to Graceland. So we said, okay, well, let's scratch that off the bucket list, and loaded everybody into a car, and we all drove down to Memphis and spent the week down there. And it was real interesting because, like, even, you know, I'm in the Midwest, but Chicago is not like the rest of the Midwest. So it was like, so we were really traveling through middle America on this trip. And like, I remember we stepped out of a restaurant and there's this older gentleman standing there, and he starts talking to my mom, and they're having a back and forth. And she mentions that she's from Chicago, and he's talking, oh, my son went to Chicago and stuff. And then very pleasant conversation. He was very friendly. He walks away, and my mother looks and goes, did you see the hat he was wearing? And I did, because it was a Trump 2024 campaign hat with the American flag on it.
And oh, thank God.
But it's just like, this is some, you know, I don't know if he's a farmer, but we were somewhere in Arkansas. So it was definitely rural area. There was no city within like 500 miles of where we were. So this guy's definitely, you know, farm belt, you know, the type who approaches Trump with tears in his eyes and thanks him for everything he's done for this country. And I'm just, but it's like, he's this very nice, friendly guy. And you just got to wonder, like, what was in it for him? You know, was it the farm subsidies? Was he convinced that Trump was the man to bring the country back to its feet after the, you know, horrendous Biden administration that nearly gave us the strongest economy the world has ever seen?
Yeah. That's the thing that's like so crazy, is you just have people who will appear to be totally mild-mannered, regular, average Joes, and then you actually look at what they're wearing, and you're like, oh, wait, oh, you're in cuckoo bananas land. I had a guy playing blackjack, poorly, I might add, and when he lifted up his arm, he had a Molon Labe tattoo next to a 3%er tattoo, and I was just like, ooh, that is rough. That is not good. That is like, man. And the guy was just like your average, not very good at blackjack bro, just playing some blackjack, hanging out at the casino. And I'm just sitting there being like, boy, this is suboptimal, because 3%ers, that's a spicy meatball. You have to put in some work to do that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy because, you know, when you mostly meet these MAGA people on, like, Twitter, it's easy to think of them all as frothing at the mouth, constantly angry, you know, hates life kind of people, because that's what you get on Twitter. You get the most extreme of any end of the political spectrum you want. Then you actually run into some salt-of-the-earth, average, you know, Joe Sixpack guy who voted for Trump and 2 years later is still wearing a hat to let people know that he voted for Trump.
That's what always gets me about these people, is that they never take the uniform off. It's like, you won the race. What are we doing here? And it's just, no, like, loving Trump is now part of my identity. And in 2 years, I'm just going to be really sad that my orange daddy is no longer president and it's all over now.
It's like these people who cry, you know, we're in Pride Month right now, and these people are crying. They're like, you know, I don't have anything wrong with those kind of people. I just wish they wouldn't, you know, shove their identity down my throat. He says while he's wearing a red hat, you know, with a Keep America Great flag behind him and everything.
Right, exactly.
See, so, if I had seen that guy, even if it was a, like, because when I worked at the Halloween store the one year, there was a guy with a Proud Boy shirt. And I said to the manager, I want to kick him out. She's like, why? He's not doing anything. I'm like, he's got a Proud Boy shirt on. He should not be in the store. We should kick him the fuck out. And I don't care if that's discrimination, because that is justified discrimination. If I had seen that guy, I would have been fired. I would have been fired because I would have been like, you out now, leave.
I mean, that's the thing, though. Somebody explained this to me at my first job at Toys R Us. They said, you know, we're under no compulsion to let these people, to let anybody shop here. We can kick somebody out for any reason. And it's helpful if you don't specifically state the reason, because then they can't claim we did it because of their political beliefs or anything. But yeah, it's people like you know, people talk about First Amendment, and it's like, okay, Spirit Halloween is not part of the federal government. They are under no compulsion to let you say or do whatever you want inside the store.
Right, exactly. Hmm. Like, the people love to like misrepresent what the First Amendment is, and they act like it forces private corporations to allow anything to happen. And it's like, no, it doesn't.
Except for forcing bakers to bake pies for gay weddings. They don't. That's the only thing that the First Amendment doesn't protect you from.
Right, exactly. Well,
I wasn't allowed to have the guy thrown out of the store, but I said, I'm not helping him. And if he comes up to me and asks me for help, I'm going to say no and walk away. I told the manager that, and she just grabbed me by the shoulder. And she's like, okay, I think you should go in the back for a little bit.
Okay, Steph, sounds like it's break time for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about being, for me, being in a casino, it's just, I've spent like all of my time dealing with just Republicans, and I just have to take it, because that's who my clientele is. It's a bunch of older white people who, when they get into politics, they're going to be that way. And you gotta say, yep, that's just the way it is. Just going to put my head down and ignore you now.
Yeah. I'm just not a super confrontational person, like, in general. So I'll be polite to somebody, no matter what. That's just who I am.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that if it wasn't my casino, if I went to play poker somewhere else, oh yeah, we would have a chat. We would be talking. But when I'm on the clock, or if I was in the casino I work at, because a lot of the casinos I work for, they let you play on the clock and stuff like that, or they'll let you come in on your day off and play. I ain't going to say stuff like that when I'm in my own house. So,
yeah. Yeah, don't burn any bridges.
Yeah.
Yeah. But.